Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine, with your host, Linnea Hubbard. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
I'm Linnea Hubbard, and today is Sunday, December 4th, 2022. Today's episode is a special report, which we're calling The Unintended Propagandist. The Gerasimov Doctrine was created in 2012 and published in February 2013. Part of the doctrine included establishing the framework to weaponize social media for disseminating misinformation and disinformation as a key part of hybrid or nonlinear warfare. Misinformation is distortions and half-truths. Sometimes people unknowingly create and distribute misinformation. Disinformation is spreading false material with the intent to harm and deceive. Created by Valery Gerasimov, the chief of the general staff of the Russian armed forces, the doctrine calls for a 4-to-1 ratio of military and non-military activity. While many non-military options are familiar when you study conventional warfare, like form coalitions, economic sanctions, the severing of diplomatic ties, negotiation, others, like controlling the information space, are newer concepts. In the 20th century, controlling the information space meant propaganda radio broadcasts, leaflets, newspaper articles, posters, pictures, videos. When the Kremlin weaponized the internet in 2013, there were over 6 billion potential nodes to weaponize by exposing the world with internet access to disinformation content. Russia applied the Gerasimov Doctrine masterfully in Ukraine, starting with the run-up to the elections in 2013, then Euromaidan, the occupation of Crimea, the faux civil war in the Donbass, and encroachment on the Minsk and Minsk II Accords. In 2015, the Kremlin turned its sights on the United States and the United Kingdom, manipulating Brexit and the 2016 elections using people such as Yevgeny Prigozhin, the head of the private military company Wagner Group, and his vast marketing, media, and social media empire. That 2015 election chant, "Lock her up, lock her up," didn't start in the United States, but in Ukraine 2 years earlier. An examination of current Kremlin talking points, amplified by propagandists such as Vladimir Solovyov and Olga Skabeyeva, echo the talking points used by QAnon and extremists on the political left and right across the United States and Europe. The idea of neo-Nazi Jews, the normalization of using the word Nazi, connecting LGBTQIA society to pedophilia, selling organs, and this idea that the political and cultural elite are drinking children's blood to stay fit. Many of these talking points started in Russia. Most people don't fall into a disinformation rabbit hole unless the material supports already established biases. One thing we teach new analysts and volunteers is the best propaganda is rooted in truth. Generally speaking, people don't just wake up one morning and decide, "Oh, hey, billionaires drink baby blood to stay alive," or "Ukraine is run by LGBTQIA Jewish neo-Nazi Satanists supported by hordes of NATO troops." This is where bloggers, internet creators, and influencers are willingly or unwittingly part of the Russian war machine. They're featured in slickly produced videos and claim to be ordinary people like you and me, selling the message of Russian Mir. In reality, these propagandists present caffeine-free diet mis- and disinformation wrapped in a beautiful package. They are the gatekeepers and recruiters who snare a small percentage of people who will then begin to consume their information from more transparent propagandists. For example, in the United States, one doesn't go from watching Tucker Carlson on Fox News one day to the next day waiting in Dallas, Texas for JFK Jr. to return and announce he's Donald Trump's vice president. If you're not familiar with QAnon conspiracy, this is a real thing. I mean, it's not like a real thing. It's a real conspiracy. The vast majority of Tucker Carlson watchers never dip a toe into QAnon, let alone plunge in head first. Our team has watched enough Russia won to cause brain damage. Still, no one calls Ukrainians Ukranazis or amplifies, "But they have nukes," every time the Kremlin feels they aren't getting enough attention. But for some people, it starts the journey of brainwashing, a lot like joining a cult. If you have a wide enough social circle, you've likely witnessed this conversion of someone firsthand. The creator we're focusing on today, Natasha from Russia, has multiple social media channels created almost 4 years ago, but found the biggest success on TikTok. She positions herself as a Russian blogger, and before the wide-scale invasion of Ukraine, her TikTok channel was dedicated to showing life in St. Petersburg. Like so many others, she created her TikTok channel during the COVID pandemic. She's young, well-educated, personable, sincere, and attractive. After the invasion and the wide-scale crackdown of protesters in Russia, which led to over 15,000 arrests, sharp-eyed followers started to see cracks in her backstory. Natasha filmed OMON forces and their preparation for protests with apparent impunity. She would record on the fringes of protests, walking with the protest group and facing no repercussions. She would fearlessly record the equipment used for facial recognition without worrying about the system recognizing her. In March, these actions appeared to be guerrilla civil disobedience. Natasha's social media profile extends past TikTok and includes Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Fun fact, YouTube is banned, and Instagram and Facebook are labeled, quote, extremist organizations. While Natasha was externally supportive of protest in Russia on TikTok, on November 11th, she retweeted Nikita Belogolovtsev, who stated after the fall of Kherson that protest doesn't work. An exploration of Natasha's social media footprint shows that her TikTok channel is carefully curated. Her retweets include Russian propagandist Zoka and have included disinformation. On April 10th, Natasha created a video to answer the question, quote, "Why do so many Russians believe the propaganda?" End quote. On the surface, this appears to be an innocuous video. But if you listen carefully to the words, there's a subtext of, "Everyone does this." This doesn't prove that Natasha always was or became a propagandist. But as the months passed, more people started to raise questions about her content. On November 16th, everything changed. It was on November 16th that Natasha announced she was raising $5,000 to buy heaters for the residents of Mariupol, and she would hand-deliver the heaters herself. On TikTok and Twitter, she explained that each heater was $30, including shipping, and she was working with another person, who's Ukrainian, to help with the distribution. The funding for the heaters was done through PayPal, which has been blocked in Russia since March 5th, and e-wallets for Russians were closed on March 18th. On November 20th, 4 days after starting the fundraiser, Natasha's PayPal was frozen, so she directed payments through her boyfriend's account. Natasha made several claims about the heaters for Mariupol residents. First, this was a group of volunteers she was working with and not organized by the Russian government or Moscow. Second, the money would be used to buy heaters to hand out, and she would show the world, quote, the real Mariupol. Finally, when Natasha was asked, she said that Russian state media would not be involved in covering the work. In reality, the so-called private initiative was organized by Roman Uniman. In 2020, the charismatic Uniman became the co-founder of the Society Future Party in Russia, a center-right political organization with ties to ultranationalists. Blocked from participating in 2021 elections, Society Future tossed their support to the New People Party. The leader of the New People Party is Alexei Nechayev, who sits on the Central Council of the All-Russia People's Front, led by Russian President Vladimir Putin. A pillar of the Society Future platform included supporting the annexation of the Donetsk People's Republic and Luhansk People's Republic into the Russian Federation. But how, you may be asking, is Natasha connected to Uniman and the heater delivery in Mariupol? Well, Uniman shared a Twitter thread explaining the program with a picture that included Natasha, front row center, as part of his entourage. Natasha ultimately claimed that 12,000 heaters would be delivered, while Uniman claimed 10,000. However, the $5,000 Natasha raised, mostly through her boyfriend in the United States, was only enough for 167 heaters. To be very clear, we are not accusing Natasha or her boyfriend of fraud, and there is no evidence to suggest that the money did not go to purchase or reimburse the purchase of heaters. In our analysis, this wasn't the grassroots campaign she advertised to her followers, and in Russia, all political parties must be registered and approved by the Kremlin. How do we know that Natasha wasn't swept up in a parallel program? She said she was working with, quote, friends, and Uniman outlined how this second wave of heater deliveries would be accomplished in a series of tweets. Uniman explained that after their first round of deliveries earlier in the year, the Society Future team received about 10,000 new requests through an online bot his political party created. The requests are managed through the portal and added to a database, with additional information gathered by interviewing the elderly on who their neighbors are. This contrasts with Natasha's claims on November 16th that this was an organic effort organized by her and a few friends. Uniman went on to explain that, based on the lessons learned, they recruited volunteers, quote, who would be more comfortable and calmer, end quote. The effort was completed by, quote, people with experience in independent election campaigns, end quote. Natasha said that the effort was being coordinated in part by a, quote, Ukrainian. In his series of tweets, Uniman reveals they have a ground mission coordinator in Mariupol who is in constant contact with Moscow. What about the claim that Russian state media isn't involved? Well, it turns out that's only a half-truth. The day after Uniman and his team arrived in Mariupol, a Russian mass media campaign started called Mariupol Comes to Life. The campaign aims to show, quote, correct pictures of the city and spread the message that there are no human victims in Mariupol. Petro Andriushenko, the exiled aide to the mayor of Mariupol, wrote on Telegram on November 29th that the only way to get an electric heater in Mariupol was free delivery through Russian volunteers. Uniman and his team were advised not to distribute the heaters from centralized locations because it could cause, quote, image loss for the Mariupol Comes to Life propaganda campaign. The Russian occupation authorities and Gauleiters wanted the teams to do individual deliveries. As word spread about the heaters, lines of hundreds of people formed where the trucks were delivering them and the coordination effort was happening. However, if people didn't pre-register, there were no heaters to distribute. Among the desperate, fights started to break out. As for Natasha showing the, quote, real Mariupol, her tweets, which are currently locked down, showed only the best of the city and not the areas where the ruins of 50,000 apartments and homes have already been torn down. Grocery stores with fresh produce and stocked shelves, although the prices are more than double that of St. Petersburg. Where there aren't stores, there are markets, but Natasha forgets to mention that you have to have a Russian permit to be a vendor, and some of these stalls are engaged in bartering, because there is little work and little income. In another series of pictures and videos, she writes, quote, electricity works, you see, end quote, and questions the report of power outages in the city. These pictures and videos came out a few days after she said that the electricity was unstable where she was staying, and the water supply was cut off. It is well documented that most in Mariupol do not have running water, because the system was shattered during the 82-day siege and is still largely unrepaired. One of the talking points shared from the Mariupol Comes Alive campaign is how everything in the city is already being repaired, and the message was used almost word for word. Quote, they fix everywhere you move, end quote. This raises another question. How did Natasha, a social media influencer of Russian life and an apparent borderline dissident of the Russian government, move across the border from Russia to occupied Ukraine without raising undue interest with the Territorial Guard and customs officials. On November 27th, the day before the Mariupol Comes Alive campaign started, Natasha tweeted that Russians crossing the border go unchecked and only Ukrainians are questioned. So this claim does not make sense when you consider that FSB Colonel Igor Girkin Strelkov was detained when he tried crossing the Ukrainian border in August. This allegation was also made when the Donetsk People's Republic documented massive lines at border checkpoints and the blockage of so-called dual-use goods, including electric heaters. What pictures did Natasha share of Mariupol? Ones that support the orders of city officials and spread the message of Mariupol comes to life. Undamaged buildings and individual people receiving their heaters. At the same time, Uniman was sharing pictures on his social media channels. While this is still largely circumstantial evidence that Natasha is or has become a propagandist, there are significant gaps in her explanations. However, her previous posting history provides more insights. On November 14th, 2 days before she announced her heater campaign, Natasha posted on Twitter, quote, "Messages in Mariupol. We are freezing. Help. Frozen. SOS. Europe is gonna freeze, they said. Ukrainians are gonna freeze, they said." End quote. When you read between the lines, a burning question emerges. Who are the people from Mariupol, then? While Society Future feels the ongoing special military operation is a mistake, the group openly supports the war and Ukrainian annexation. And when you dig deeper into Natasha's posting history, so does she. In 2019, during another volunteer trip to Luhansk, she helped open up 2 gyms in military academies that could also be used by area children. That is, when they weren't being used for training future Luhansk People's Republic militias. On November 12th, she defended Alexander Dugin in a social media post that the man called Putin's brain has since deleted. In his screed, he condemned President Putin for the retreat from Kherson and appeared to have threatened the Russian president directly. Yet on the same day, she retweeted Benji Bloom, sharing how Dugin did make a direct threat to President Putin. In another sign that there is more to this story, just before her trip to Mariupol, Natasha visited the new PMC Wagner Group headquarters building in St. Petersburg. While there, she learned from PMC Wagner officials that Prigozhin's vision was to use the center as an incubator for inventors, who can get grants from the company for their research and development work. She also learned that bloggers and the media, that is, PMC Wagner-aligned bloggers and media, will have places to work and access equipment if needed. However, in an exchange with the Serbian-based Russian propagandist Zoka, Natasha wrote about PMC Wagner, quote, "Mercenaries are mercenaries. That's why they are supposed to be banned by our law," end quote. While Stalin did not tolerate any opposition to his party or rule, he understood the importance of creating the illusion of opposition. By maintaining close relationships with journalists and the press, Stalin could manipulate the message while controlling oppositional messages. On paper, Society Future and the All People's Party are opposed to Putin's rule, but for the most part, not his policies. The danger of Russian life influencers is they become a gateway to the deeper and more dangerous disinformation funnel. The last 2 weeks have put too many holes into Natasha's backstory, and the footprints from her social media past expose a bigger picture. This does not make Natasha a bad person, or the only person that does this. It's important to understand that if you know Natasha only from her TikTok persona, her content there is different from other platforms. She follows, shares, and responds to Russian Twitter accounts that create dangerous and blatant disinformation. Interestingly, she never shared the picture that appeared on Uniman's Twitter account. Sometimes, finding the truth requires taking a long journey. And not everything is as it seems.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand?
Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.